You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Section 8 of The Wood Beyond the World. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, and to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Read by Corrie Samuel. The Wood Beyond the World by William Morris. Chapter 22 of The Dwarf and the Pardon. Now she began to say, "My friend, now shall I tell thee what I have done for thee and me, and if thou have a mind to blame me and punish me, yet remember first that what I have done has been for thee and our hope of happy life. Well, I shall tell thee." But therewithal her speech failed her, and springing up, she faced the bent and pointed with her finger, and she, all deadly pale, and shaking so that she might scarce stand, and might speak no word, though a feeble gibbering came from her mouth. Walter leapt up, and put his arm about her, and looked whitherward she pointed, and at first saw nought, and then nought but a brown and yellow rock rolling down the bent, and then at last he saw that it was the evil thing which had met him when first he came into that land, and now it stood upright, and he could see that it was clad in a coat of yellow samite. Then Walter stooped down, and gat his bow into his hand, and stood before the maid while he knocked an arrow. But the monster made ready his tackle, while Walter was stooping down, and or ever he could loose, his bowstring twanged, and an arrow flew forth, and grazed the maid's arm above the elbow, so that the blood ran, and the dwarf gave forth a harsh and horrible cry. Then flew Walter's shaft, and true was it aimed, so that it smote the monster full on the breast, but fell down from him, as if he were made of stone. Then the creature set up his horrible cry again, and loosed withal, and Walter deemed that he had smitten the maid, for she fell down in a heap behind him. Then waxed Walter wood wroth, and cast down his bow and drew his sword, and strode forward towards the bent against the dwarf. But he roared out again, and there were words in his roar, and he said, "Fool, thou shalt go free if thou wilt give up the enemy." "And who," said Walter, "is the enemy?" Yelled the dwarf, "She, the pink and white thing lying there, she is not dead yet, she is but dying for fear of me. Yea, she hath reason. I could have set the shaft in her heart as easily as scratching her arm, but I need her body alive, that I may wreak me on her." "What wilt thou do with her?" said Walter. For now he had heard that the maid was not slain, he had waxed wary again, and stood watching his chance. The dwarf yelled so at his last word, that no word came from the noise awhile, and then he said, "What will I with her? Let me at her, and stand by, and look on, and then shalt thou have a strange tale to carry off with thee, for I will let thee go this while." Said Walter, "But what need to wreak thee? What hath she done to thee?"
"What need? What need?" roared the dwarf. "Have I not told thee that she is the enemy? And thou askest of what she hath done? Of what? Fool, she is the murderer. She hath slain the lady that was our lady, and that made us, she whom we all worshipped and adored. O impudent fool! Therewith he knocked and loosed another arrow, which would have smitten Walter in the face, but that he lowered his head in the very nick of time. Then, with a great shout, he rushed up the bent, and was on the dwarf before he could get his sword out, and leaping aloft, dealt the creature a stroke amidmost of the crown. And so mightily he smote, that he drave the heavy sword right through to the teeth, so that he fell dead straightway. Walter stood over him a minute, and when he saw that he moved not, he went slowly down to the stream, whereby the maid yet lay, cowering down and quivering all over, and covering her face with her hands. Then he took her by the wrist, and said, "Up, maiden, up, and tell me this tale of the slaying." But she shrunk away from him, and looked at him with wild eyes, and said, "What hast thou done with him? Is he gone?" "He is dead," said Walter. "I have slain him. There lies he with cloven skull on the bent side, unless, forsooth, he vanish away like the lion I slew, or else, perchance, he will come to life again. And art thou a lie, like to the rest of them? Let me hear of this slaying." She rose up, and stood before him, trembling, and said, "Oh, thou art angry with me, and thine anger I cannot bear. Ah, what have I done? Thou hast slain one, and I, maybe, the other, and never had we escaped till both these twain were dead. Ah, thou dost not know, thou dost not know. O me, what shall I do to appease thy wrath?" He looked on her, and his heart rose to his mouth at the thought of sundering from her. Still he looked on her, and her piteous friendly face melted all his heart. He threw down his sword, and took her by the shoulders, and kissed her face over and over, and strained her to him, so that he felt the sweetness of her bosom. Then he lifted her up like a child, and set her down on the green grass, and went down to the water, and filled his hat therefrom, and came back to her. Then he gave her to drink, and bathed her face and her hands, so that the colour came aback to the cheeks and lips of her. And she smiled on him, and kissed his hands, and said, "Oh, now thou art kind to me." "Yea," said he, "and true it is that if thou hast slain, I have done no less, and if thou hast lied, even so have I. And if thou hast played the wanton, as I deem not that thou hast, I full surely have so done. So now thou shalt pardon me, and when thy spirit has come back to thee, thou shalt tell me thy tale in all friendship, and in all loving kindness will I hearken the same." Therewith he knelt before her, and kissed her feet. But she said, "Yea, yea, what thou willest, that will I do. But first tell me one thing. Hast thou buried this horror, and hidden him in the earth?" He deemed that fear had bewildered her, and that she scarcely yet knew how things had gone. But he said, "Fair sweet friend, I have not done it as yet, but now will I go and do it, if it seem good to thee." "Yea," she said, "but first must thou smite off his head, and lie it by his buttocks when he is in the earth, or evil things will happen else. This of the burying is no idle matter, I bid thee believe." "I doubt it not," said he. "Surely such malice as was in this one will be hard to slay." And he picked up his sword, and turned to go to the field of deed. She said, "I must needs go with thee. Terror hath so filled my soul that I durst not abide here without thee." So they went both together to where the creature lay. The maid durst not look on the dead monster, but Walter noted that he was girt with a big ungainly sax,
so he drew it from the sheath, and there smote off the hideous head of the fiend with his own weapon. Then they twain together laboured the earth, she with Walter's sword, he with the ugly sacks, till they had made a grave deep and wide enough, and therein they thrust the creature, and covered him up, weapons and all together. Chapter 23 Of the Peaceful Ending of That Wild Day. Thereafter Walter led the maid down again, and said to her, "Now, sweetling, shall the story be told?" "Nay, friend," she said, "not here. This place hath been polluted by my craven fear, and the horror of the vile wretch, of whom no words may tell his vileness. Let us hence and onward. Thou seest I have once more come to life again." "But," said he, "thou hast been hurt by the dwarf's arrow." She laughed, and said, "Had I never had greater hurt from them than that, little had been the tale thereof. Yet whereas thou lookest dolorous about it, we will speedily heal it." Therewith she sought about, and found nigh the streamside certain herbs, and she spake words over them, and bade Walter lay them on the wound, which forsooth was of the least. And he did so, and bound a strip of his shirt about her arm, and then would she set forth. But he said, "Thou art all unshod, and, but if that be seen to, our journey shall be stayed by thy footsoreness. I may make a shift to fashion thee brogues." She said, "I may well go barefoot, and in any case I entreat thee that we tarry here no longer, but go away hence, if it be but for a mile." And she looked piteously on him, so that he might not gainsay her. So then they crossed the stream, and set forward, when amidst all these haps the day was worn to mid-morning. But after they had gone a mile, they sat them down on a knoll under the shadow of a big thorn-tree, within sight of the mountains. Then said Walter, "Now will I cut thee the brogues from the skirt of my buff coat, which shall be well meet for such work, and meanwhile shalt thou tell me thy tale." "Thou art kind," she said, "but be kinder yet, and abide my tale till we have done our day's work. For we were best to make no long delay here, because, though thou hast slain the king dwarf, yet there be others of his kindred who swarm in some parts of the wood as the rabbits in a warren. Now true it is that they have but little understanding, less, it may be, than the very brute beasts, and that, as I said afore, unless they be set on our slot like to hounds, they shall have no inkling of where to seek us. Yet might they happen upon us by mere misadventure. And moreover, friend," quoth she, blushing, "I would beg of thee some little respite, for though I scarce fear thy wrath any more, since thou hast been so kind to me, yet is there shame in that which I have to tell thee. Wherefore, since the fairest of the day is before us, let us use it all we may, and, when thou hast done me my new foot-gear, get us gone forward again." He kissed her kindly, and yea said her asking. He had already fallen to work on the leather, and in a while had fashioned her the brogues. So she tied them to her feet, and arose with a smile, and said, "Now am I hale and strong again, what with the rest, and what with thy loving kindness, and thou shalt see how nimble I shall be to leave this land, for as fair as it is. Since forsooth a land of lies it is, and of grief to the children of Adam." So they went their ways thence, and fared nimbly indeed, and made no stay till some 3 hours after noon, when they rested by a thicket side, where the strawberries grew plenty. They ate thereof what they would, and from a great oak hard by Walter shot him first one culver, and then another, and hung them to his girdle, to be for their evening's meal. Sithence they went forward again, and naught befell them to tell of, till they were come, whenas it lacked scarce an hour of sunset, to the banks of another river, not right great, but bigger than the last one. There the maid cast herself down, and said, "Friend, no further will thy friend go this even. Nay, to say sooth, she cannot. So now we will eat of thy venison, and then shall my tale be, since I may no longer delay it, and thereafter shall our slumber be sweet and safe as I deem." She spake merrily now, and as one who feared nothing, and Walter was much heartened by her words and her voice, and he fell to and made a fire, and a woodland oven in the earth, and sithence dighted his fowl, and baked them after the manner of woodmen. And they ate, both of them, in all love, and in good liking of life, and were much strengthened by their supper. And when they were done, Walter eked his fire, both against the chill of the midnight and dawning, and for a guard against wild beasts. And by that time night was come, and the moon arisen. Then the maiden drew up to the fire, and turned to Walter, and spake. Chapter 24. The Maid Tells of What Had Befallen Her. "Now, friend, by the clear of the moon and this firelight, will I tell what I may and can of my tale. Thus it is, if I be wholly of the race of Adam, I wot not, nor can I tell thee how many years old I may be. For there are, as it were, shards or gaps in my life, wherein are but a few things dimly remembered, and doubtless many things forgotten. I remember well when I was a little child, and right happy, and there were people about me whom I loved, and who loved me. It was not in this land, but all things were lovely there, the year's beginning, the happy mid-year, the year's waning, the year's ending, and then again its beginning. That passed away, and then for a while is more than dimness, for naught I remember, save that I was. Thereafter I remember again, and am a young maiden, and I know some things, and long to know more. I am nowise happy. I am amongst people who bid me go, and I go, and do this, and I do it. None loveth me, none tormenteth me, but I wear my heart in longing, for I scarce know what. Neither then am I in this land, but in a land that I love not, and a house that is big and stately, but naught lovely. Then is a dim time again, and sithence a time not right clear, an evil time, wherein I am older, well nigh grown to womanhood. There are a many folk about me, and they foul, and greedy, and hard, and my spirit is fierce, and my body feeble, and I am set to tasks that I would not do by them that are unwiser than I, and smitten I am by them that are less valiant than I, and I know lack, and stripes, and diverse misery. But all that is now become but a dim picture to me, save that amongst all these unfriends is a friend to me, an old woman, who telleth me sweet tales of other life, wherein all is high and goodly, or at the least valiant and doughty. And she setteth hope in my heart, and learneth me, and maketh me to know much, oh, much, so that at last I am grown wise, and wise to be mighty if I durst. Yet am I nought in this land all this while, but, as me seemeth, in a great and a foul city. And then, as it were, I fall asleep, and in my sleep is nought, save here and there a wild dream, some deal lovely, some deal hideous, but of this dream is my mistress a part, and the monster withal, whose head thou didst cleave to-day. But when I am awakened from it, then am I verily in this land, and myself as thou seest me to-day. and the first part of my life here is this, that I am in the pillared hall yonder, half-clad, and with bound hands, and the dwarf leadeth me to the lady, and I hear his horrible croak, as he saith, "Lady, will this one do?" And then the sweet voice of the lady saying, "This one will do. Thou shalt have thy reward. Now, set thou the token upon her." Then I remember the dwarf dragging me away, and my heart sinking for fear of him. But for that time he did me no more harm than the riveting upon my leg this iron ring, which here thou seest. So from that time forward I have lived in this land, and been the thrall of the lady. And I remember my life here day by day, and no part of it has fallen into the dimness of dreams. Thereof will I tell thee but little, but this I will tell thee, that in spite of my past dreams, or it may be because of them, I had not lost the wisdom which the old woman had erst learned me, and for more wisdom I longed. Maybe this longing shall now make both thee and me happy, but for the passing time it brought me grief. For at first my mistress was indeed wayward with me, but as any great lady might be with her bought thrall, whiles caressing me, and whiles chastising me, as her mood went. But she seemed not to be cruel of malice, or with any set purpose. But so it was, rather little by little, than by any great sudden uncovering of my intent, that she came to know that I also had some of the wisdom whereby she lived her queenly life. That was about 2 years after I was first her thrall, and 3 weary years have gone by since she began to see in me the enemy of her days. Now why or wherefore I know not, but it seemeth that it would not avail her to slay me outright, or suffer me to die, but naught withheld her from piling up griefs and miseries on my head. At last she set her servant, the dwarf, upon me, even he whose head thou clavest to-day. Many things I bore from him, whereof it were unseemly for my tongue to tell before thee. But the time came when he exceeded, and I could bear no more, and then I showed him this sharp knife, wherewith I would have thrust me through to the heart if thou hadst not pardoned me e'en now. And I told him that if he forbore me not, I would slay, not him, but myself. And this he might not away with, because of the commandment of the lady, who had given him the word that in any case I must be kept living. And her hand, withal, fear held somewhat hereafter. Yet was there need to me of all my wisdom, for with all this her hatred grew, and wiles raged within her so furiously that it overmastered her fear, and at such times she would have put me to death if I had not escaped her by some turn of my law. Now further, I shall tell thee that somewhat more than a year ago hither to this land came the king's son, the second goodly man, as thou art the third, whom her sorceries have drawn hither since I have dwelt here. Forsooth, when he first came, he seemed to us, to me, and yet more to my lady, to be as beautiful as an angel, and sorely she loved him, and he her, after his fashion. But he was light-minded and cold-hearted, and in a while he must needs turn his eyes upon me, and offer me his love, which was but foul and unkind, as it turned out. For when I naysaid him, as maybe I had not done, save for fear of my mistress, he had no pity upon me, but spared not to lead me into the trap of her wrath, and leave me without help or a good word. But, O friend, in spite of all grief and anguish, I learned still, and waxed wise and wiser, abiding the day of my deliverance, which has come, and thou art come. Therewith she took Walter's hands and kissed them, but he kissed her face, and her tears wet her lips. Then she went on. But sithence, months ago, the lady began to weary of this dastard, despite of his beauty. And then it was thy turn to be swept into her net. I partly guess how. For on a day in broad daylight, as I was serving my mistress in the hall, and the evil thing, whose head is now cloven, was lying across the threshold of the door, as it were a dream fell upon me, though I strove to cast it off for fear of chastisement. For the pillared hall wavered and vanished from my sight, and my feet were treading a rough stone pavement instead of the marble wonder of the hall, and there was a scent of the salt sea and of the tackle of ships, and behind me were tall houses, and before me the ships indeed, with their ropes beating, and their sails flapping, and their masts wavering. And in mine ears was the hail and how of mariners, things that I had seen and heard in the dimness of my life gone by. And there was I, and the dwarf before me, and the lady after me, going over the gangway aboard of a tall ship, and she gathered way and was gotten out of the haven, and straightway I saw the mariners cast abroad their ancient. Quoth Walter, What then? Sawest thou the blazon thereon, of a wolf-like beast ramping up against a maiden? And that might well have been thou? She said, Yea, so it was, but refrain thee, that I may tell on my tale. The ship and the sea vanished away, but I was not back in the hall of the Golden House, and again were we three in the street of the selfsame town which we had but just left. But somewhat dim was my vision thereof, and I saw little, save the door of a goodly house before me, and speedily it died out, and we were again in the pillared hall, wherein my thraldom was made manifest. Maiden, said Walter, one question I would ask thee, to wit, didst thou see me on the quay by the ships? Nay, she said, there were many folk about, but they were all as images of the aliens to me. Now hearken further. 3 months thereafter came the dream upon me again, when we were all three together in the pillared hall, and again was the vision somewhat dim. Once more we were in the street of a busy town, but all unlike to that other one, and there were men standing together on our right hands by the door of a house. Yea, yea, quoth Walter, and forsooth one of them was who but I. Refrain thee, beloved, she said, for my tale draweth to its ending, and I would have thee hearken heedfully, for maybe thou shalt once again deem my deed past pardon. Some 20 days after this last dream, I had some leisure for my mistress's service, so I went to disport me by the well of the oak tree. Or forsooth, she might have set in my mind the thought of going there, that I might meet thee, and give her some occasion against me. And I sat thereby, no wise loving the earth, but sick at heart, because of late the king's son had been more than ever instant with me to yield him my body, threatening me else with casting me into all that the worst could do to me of torments and shames day by day. I say my heart failed me, and I was well nigh brought to the point of yea-saying his desires, that I might take the chance of something befalling me that were less bad than the worst. But here must I tell thee a thing, and pray thee to take it to heart. This, more than aught else, had given me strength to naysay that dastard, that my wisdom both hath been, and now is, the wisdom of a wise maid, and not of a woman, and all the might thereof shall I lose with my maidenhead. Evil wilt thou think of me then, for all was I tried so sore, that I was at point to cast it all away, so wretchedly as I shrank from the horror of the lady's wrath. But there, as I sat pondering these things, I saw a man coming, and thought no otherwise thereof but that it was the king's son, till I saw the stranger drawing near, and his golden hair, and his grey eyes, and then I heard his voice, and his kindness pierced my heart, and I knew that my friend had come to see me. And, oh, friend, these tears are for the sweetness of that past hour." Said Walter, "I came to see my friend, I also. Now have I noted what thou badest me, and I will forbear all as thou commandest me, till we be safe out of the desert, and far away from all evil things. But wilt thou ban me from all caresses?" She laughed amidst of her tears, and said, "Oh, nay, poor lad, if thou wilt be but wise." Then she leaned toward him, and took his face betwixt her hands, and kissed him oft, and the tears started in his eyes for love and pity of her. Then she said, "Alas, friend, even yet mayest thou doom me guilty, and all thy love may turn away from me, when I have told thee all that I have done for the sake of thee and me. Oh, if then there might be some chastisement for the guilty woman, and not mere sundering." "Fear nothing, sweetling," said he, "for indeed I deem that already I know partly what thou hast done." She sighed, and said, "I will tell thee next, that I banned thy kissing and caressing of me, till today, because I knew that my mistress would surely know if a man, if thou, hadst so much as touched a finger of mine in love. It was to try me herein that on the morning of the hunting she kissed and embraced me, till I almost died thereof, and showed thee my shoulder and my limbs, and to try thee withal, if thine eye should glister, or thy cheek flush thereat. For indeed she was raging in jealousy of thee. Next, my friend, even whiles we were talking together at the well of the rock, I was pondering on what we should do to escape from this land of lies. Maybe thou wilt say, why didst thou not take my hand and flee with me as we fled to-day? Friend, it is most true that were she not dead, we had not escaped thus far, for her trackers would have followed us, set on by her, and brought us back to an evil fate. Therefore I tell thee that from the first I did plot the death of those two, the dwarf and the mistress. For no otherwise mightest thou live, or I escape from death in life. But as to the dastard who threatened me with a thrall's pains, I heeded him naught to live or die, for well I knew that thy valiant sword, yea, or thy bare hands, would speedily tame him. Now first I knew that I must make a show of yielding to the king's son, and somewhat how I did therein thou knowest. But no night and no time did I give him to bed me, till after I had met thee, as thou wentest to the golden house, before the adventure of fetching the lion's skin. And up to that time I had scarce known what to do, save ever to bid thee, with sore grief and pain, to yield thee to the wicked woman's desire. But as we spake together, there by the stream, and I saw that the evil thing, whose head thou clavest e'en now, was spying on us, then amidst the sickness of terror which ever came over me whensoever I thought of him, and much more when I saw him, ah, he is dead now, it came flashing into my mind how I might destroy my enemy. Therefore I made the dwarf my messenger to her, by bidding thee to my bed in such wise that he might hear it. And wot thou well that he speedily carried her the tidings. Meanwhile I hastened to lie to the king's son, and all privily bade him come to me, and not thee. And thereafter, by dint of waiting and watching, and taking the only chance that there was, I met thee as thou camest back from fetching the skin of the lion that never was, and gave thee that warning, or else had we been undone indeed. Said Walter, "Was the lion of her making, or of thine, then?" She said, "Of hers, why should I deal with such a matter?" "Yea," said Walter, "but she verily swooned, and she was verily wroth with the enemy. The maid smiled, and said, "If her lie was not like very sooth, then had she not been the crafts master that I knew her. One may lie otherwise than with the tongue alone. Yet indeed, her wrath against the enemy was naught feigned, for the enemy was even I, and in these latter days never did her wrath leave me. But to go on with my tale. Now doubt thou not that, when thou camest into the hall yester-eve, the mistress knew of thy counterfeit tryst with me, and meant naught but death for thee, yet first would she have thee in her arms again. Therefore did she make much of thee at table, and that was partly for my torment also. And therefore did she make that tryst with thee, and deemed doubtless that thou wouldst not dare to forego it, even if thou shouldst go to me thereafter. Now I had trained that dastard to me, as I have told thee, but I gave him a sleepy draught, so that when I came to the bed he might not move toward me, nor open his eyes, but I lay down beside him, so that the lady might know that my body had been there, for well had she wotted if it had not. Then, as there I lay, I cast over him thy shape, so that none might have known but that thou wert lying by my side. And there, trembling, I abode what should befall. Thus I passed through the hour, whenas thou shouldest have been at her chamber, and the time of my tryst with thee was come as the mistress would be deeming, so that I looked for her speedily, and my heart well nigh failed me for fear of her cruelty. Presently, then, I heard a stirring in her chamber, and I slipped from out the bed, and hid me behind the hangings, and was like to die for fear of her. And lo, presently she came stealing in softly, holding a lamp in one hand, and a knife in the other. And I tell thee of a sooth that I also had a sharp knife in my hand, to defend my life if need were. She held the lamp up above her head, before she drew near to the bedside, and I heard her mutter, "She is not there then, but she shall be taken." Then she went up to the bed, and stooped over it, and laid her hand on the place where I had lain, and therewith her eyes turned to that false image of thee lying there, and she fell a-trembling and shaking, and the lamp fell to the floor and was quenched. But there was bright moonlight in the room, and still I could see what betid. But she uttered a noise like the low roar of a wild beast, and I saw her arm and hand rise up, and the flashing of the steel beneath the hand, and then down came the hand and the steel, and I went nigh to swooning, lest perchance I had wrought over well, and thine image were thy very self. The dastard died without a groan. Why should I lament him? I cannot. But the lady drew him toward her, and snatched the clothes from off his shoulders and breast, and fell a-gibbering, sounds mostly without meaning, but broken here and there with words. Then I heard her say, "I shall forget, I shall forget, and the new days shall come." Then was there silence of her a little. And thereafter she cried out, in a terrible voice, "Oh no, 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 I cannot forget, I cannot forget." And she raised a great wailing cry that filled all the night with horror. "Didst thou not hear it?" And caught up the knife from the bed, and thrust it into her breast, and fell down a dead heap over the bed, and onto the man whom she had slain. And then I thought of thee, and joy smote across my terror. How shall I gainsay it? And I fled away to thee, and I took thine hands in mine, thy dear hands, and we fled away together. Shall we be still together? He spoke slowly, and touched her not. And she, forbearing all sobbing and weeping, sat looking wistfully on him. He said, I think thou hast told me all. And whether thy guile slew her, or her own evil heart, she was slain last night, who lay in mine arms the night before. It was ill, and ill done of me, for I loved not her, but thee, and I wished for her death, that I might be with thee. Thou wottest this, and still thou lovest me, it may be overweeningly. What have I to say then? If there be any guilt of guile, I also was in the guile. And if there be any guilt of murder, I also was in the murder. Thus we say to each other, and to God and his hallows we say, we too have conspired to slay the woman who tormented one of us, and would have slain the other. And if we have done amiss therein, then shall we two together pay the penalty, for in this have we done as one body and one soul. Therewith he put his arms about her, and kissed her, but soberly and friendly, as if he would comfort her. And thereafter he said to her, maybe tomorrow, in the sunlight, I will ask thee of this woman what she verily was, but now let her be. And thou art overwearied, and I bid thee sleep. So he went about, and gathered of bracken a great heap for her bed, and did his coat thereover, and led her thereto. And she lay down meekly, and smiled, and crossed her arms over her bosom, and presently fell asleep. But as for him, he watched by the fireside, till dawn began to glimmer, and then he also laid him down and slept. End of section 8. Section 9 of The Wood Beyond the World. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, and to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Read by Corey Samuel. The Wood Beyond the World by William Morris. Chapter 25 of The Triumphant Summer Array of the Maid. When the day was bright, Walter arose, and met the maid coming from the river bank, fresh and rosy from the water. She paled a little when they met face to face, and she shrank from him shyly. But he took her hand, and kissed her frankly, and the two were glad, and had no need to tell each other of their joy, though much else they deemed they had to say, could they have found words thereto. So they came to their fire, and sat down, and fell to breakfast, and ere they were done, the maid said, "My master, thou seest we be come nigh unto the hill country, and to-day about sunset belike, we shall come into the land of the bear folk. And both it is, that there is peril if we fall into their hands, and that we may scarce escape them. Yet I deem that we may deal with the peril by wisdom." "What is the peril?" said Walter. "I mean, what is the worst of it?" said the maid. "To be offered up in sacrifice to their God." "But if we escape death at their hands, what then?" said Walter. "One of two things," said she. "The first, that they shall take us into their tribe." "And will they sunder us in that case?" said Walter. "Nay," said she. Walter laughed, and said, "Therein is little harm then, but what is the other chance?" Said she, "That we leave them with their good will, and come back to one of the lands of Christendom." Said Walter, "I am not all so sure that this is the better of the two choices, though forsooth thou seemest to think so. But tell me now, what like is their God, that they should offer up newcomers to him?" "Their God is a woman," she said, "and the mother of their nation and tribes, or so they deem, before the days when they had chieftains and lords of battle. "That will be long ago," said he. "How then may she be living now?" Said the maid, "Doubtless that woman of yore agone is dead this many and many a year, but they take to them still a new woman, one after other, as they may happen on them, to be in the stead of the ancient mother. And to tell thee the very truth right out, she that lieth dead in the pillared hall was even the last of these, and now, if they knew it, they lack a god. This shall we tell them." "Yea, yea," said Walter, "a goodly welcome shall we have of them then, if we come amongst them with our hands red with the blood of their god." She smiled on him, and said, "If I come amongst them with the tidings that I have slain her, and they trow therein, without doubt they shall make me lady and goddess in her stead." "This is a strange word," said Walter. "But if so they do, how shall that further us in reaching the kindreds of the world, and the folk of Holy Church?" She laughed outright, so joyous was she grown, now that she knew that his life was yet to be a part of hers. "Sweetheart," she said, "now I see that thou desirest wholly what I desire. Yet in any case, abiding with them would be living and not dying, even as thou hadst it e'en now. But forsooth, they will not hinder our departure, if they deem me their god. They do not look for it, nor desire it, that their god should dwell with them daily. Have no fear." Then she laughed again, and said, "What? Thou lookest on me, and deemest me to be but a sorry image of a goddess, and me with my scanty coat, and bare arms, and naked feet. But wait! I know well how to array me when the time cometh. Thou shalt see it. And now, my master, were it not meet that we took to the road?" So they arose, and found a ford of the river that took the maid but to the knee, and so set forth up the greensward of the slopes, whereas there were but few trees, so went they faring toward the hill country. At the last they were come to the feet of the very hills, and in the hollows betwixt the buttresses of them grew nut and berry trees, and the greensward round about them was both thick and much flowery. There they stayed them, and dined, whereas Walter had shot a hare by the way, and they had found a bubbling spring under a grey stone in a bight of the coppice, wherein now the birds were singing their best. When they had eaten, and had rested somewhat, the maid arose, and said, "Now shall the queen array herself, and seem like a very goddess." Then she fell to work, while Walter looked on, and she made a garland for her head of eglantine, where the roses were the fairest, and with mingled flowers of the summer she wreathed her middle about, and let the garland of them hang down to below her knees, and knots of the flowers she made fast to the skirts of her coat, and did them for arm-rings about her arms, and for anklets and sandals for her feet. Then she set a garland about Walter's head, and then stood a little off from him, and set her feet together, and lifted up her arms, and said, "Lo now, am I not as like to the mother of summer as if I were clad in silk and gold? And even so shall I be deemed by the folk of the bear. Come now, thou shalt see how all shall be well." She laughed joyously, but he might scarce laugh for pity of his love. Then they set forth again, and began to climb the hills, and the hours wore as they went in sweet converse, till at last Walter looked on the maid, and smiled on her, and said, "One thing I would say to thee, lovely friend, to wit, wert thou clad in silk and gold, thy stately raiment might well suffer a few stains, or here and there a rent may be. But stately would it be still, when the folk of the bear should come up against thee. But as to this flowery array of thine, in a few hours it shall be all faded and naught. Nay, even now, as I look on thee, The meadow-sweet that hangeth from thy girdle-stead has waxen dull, and welted, and the blossoming eye-bright that is for a hem to the little white coat of thee is already forgetting how to be bright and blue. What sayest thou then?" She laughed at his word, and stood still, and looked back over her shoulder, while with her fingers she dealt with the flowers about her side, like to a bird preening his feathers. Then she said, "Is it verily so, as thou sayest? Look again." So he looked, and wondered, for lo, beneath his eyes the spires of the meadow-sweet grew crisp and clear again, the eye-bright blossoms shone once more over the whiteness of her legs, the eglantine roses opened, and all was as fresh and bright as if it were still growing on its own roots. He wondered, and was even some deal aghast, but she said, "Dear friend, be not troubled. Did I not tell thee that I am wise in hidden lore? But in my wisdom shall be no longer any scathe to any man. And again, this my wisdom, as I told thee erst, shall end on the day whereon I am made all happy. And it is thou that shall wield it all, my master. Yet must my wisdom needs endure for a little season yet. Let us on, then, boldly and happily." Chapter 26. They come to the folk of the Bears. On they went, and before long they were come up onto the down country, where was scarce a tree, save gnarled and knotty thorn bushes here and there, but nought else higher than the whin. And here, on these upper lands, they saw that the pastures were much burned with the drought, albeit summer was not worn old. Now they went, making due south toward the mountains, whose heads they saw from time to time rising deep blue over the bleak greyness of the downland ridges. And so they went, till at last, hard on sunset, after they had climbed long over a high bent, they came to the brow thereof, and looking down, beheld new tidings. There was a wide valley below them, greener than the downs which they had come over, and greener yet amidmost, from the watering of a stream which, all beset with willows, wound about the bottom. Sheep and neat were pasturing about the dale, and moreover a long line of smoke was going up straight into the windless heavens, from the midst of a ring of little round houses built of turfs, and thatched with reed. And beyond that, toward an east-lying bight of the dale, they could see what looked like to a doom-ring of big stones, though there were no rocky places in that land. About the cooking fire, amidst of the houses, and here and there otherwhere, they saw, standing, or going to and fro, huge figures of men and women, with children playing about betwixt them. They stood and gazed down at it for a minute or two, and though all were at peace there, yet to Walter, at least, it seemed strange and awful. He spake softly, as though he would not have his voice reach those men, though they were, forsooth, out of earshot of anything save a shout. "Are these, then, the children of the Bear? What shall we do now?" She said, "Yea, of the Bear they be, though there be other folks of them far and far away to the northward and eastward, near to the borders of the sea. And as to what we shall do, let us go down at once, and peacefully. Indeed, by now there will be no escape from them, for lo you, they have seen us." Forsooth, some three or four of the big men had turned them toward the bent whereon stood the twain, and were hailing them, in huge rough voices, wherein, howsoever, seemed to be no anger or threat. So the maid took Walter by the hand, and thus they went down quietly, and the Bear folk, seeing them, stood all together, facing them, to abide their coming. Walter saw of them that, though they were very tall and bigly made, they were not so far above the stature of men as to be marvels. The carles were long-haired and shaggy of beard, and their hair all red or tawny. Their skins, where their naked flesh showed, were burned brown with sun and weather, but to a fair and pleasant brown, naught like to blackamoors. The queens were comely and well-eyed, nor was there anything of fierce or evil-looking about either the carles or the queens, but somewhat grave and solemn of aspect were they. Clad were they all, saving the young men-children, but somewhat scantily, and in naught save sheepskins or deerskins. For weapons they saw amongst them clubs, and spears headed with bone or flint, and ugly axes of big flints set in wooden handles, nor was there, as far as they could see, either now or afterward, any bow amongst them. But some of the young men seemed to have slings done about their shoulders. Now, when they were come but 3 fathom from them, the maid lifted up her voice, and spake clearly and sweetly. "Hail, ye folk of the Bears! We have come amongst you, and that for your good, and not for your hurt. Wherefore we would know if we be welcome." There was an old man who stood foremost in the midst, clad in a mantle of deerskins worked very goodly, and with a gold ring on his arm, and a chaplet of blue stones on his head, and he spake, "Little are ye, but so goodly, that if ye were but bigger, we should deem that ye were come from the God's house. Yet have I heard, that how mighty soever may the gods be, and chiefly our God, they be at whiles naught so bigly made as we of the Bears. How this may be, I wot not. But if ye be not of the gods, or their kindred, then are ye mere aliens, and we know not what to do with aliens, save we meet them in battle, or give them to the God, or save we make them children of the Bear. But yet again, ye may be messengers of some folk who would bind friendship and alliance with us, in which case ye shall at the least depart in peace, and whiles ye are with us shall be our guests in all good cheer. Now, therefore, we bid you declare the matter unto us." Then spake the maid, "Father, it were easy for us to declare what we be unto you here present, but meseemeth ye who be gathered round the fire here this evening are less than the whole tale of the children of the Bear."
"So it is, maiden," said the elder, "that many more children hath the Bear."
"This then we bid you," said the maid, "that ye send the tokens round and gather your people to you, and when they be assembled in the doom-ring, then shall we put our errand before you, and according to that shall ye deal with us."
"Thou hast spoken well," said the elder, "and even so had we bidden you ourselves. Tomorrow, before noon, shall ye stand in the doom-ring in this dale, and speak with the children of the Bear."
Therewith he turned to his own folk, and called out something, whereof those twain knew not the meaning, and there came to him, one after another, 6 young men, unto each of whom he gave a thing from out his pouch, but what it was Walter might not see, save that it was little and of small account. To each, also, he spake a word or two, and straight they set off running, one after the other, turning toward the bent which was over against that whereby the twain had come into the dale, and were soon out of sight in the gathering dusk. Then the elder turned him again to Walter and the maid, and spake,
"Man and woman, whatsoever ye may be, or whatsoever may abide you tomorrow, tonight ye are welcome guests to us, so we bid you come eat and drink at our fire."
So they sat all together upon the grass, round about the embers of the fire, and ate curds and cheese, and drank milk in abundance. And as the night grew on them, they quickened the fire, that they might have light. This wild folk talked merrily amongst themselves, with laughter enough and friendly jests. But to the newcomers they were few-spoken, though, as the twain deemed, for no enmity that they bore them. But this found Walter, that the young ones, both men and women, seemed to find it a hard matter to keep their eyes off them, and seemed, withal, to gaze on them with somewhat of doubt, or, it might be, of fear. So when the night was wearing a little, the elder arose and bade the twain to come with him, and led them to a small house or booth, which was amidmost of all, and somewhat bigger than the others, and he did them to wit that they should rest there that night, and bade them sleep in peace and without fear till the morrow. So they entered, and found beds thereon of heather and ling, and they laid them down sweetly, like brother and sister, when they had kissed each other. But they noted that four brisk men lay without the booth, and across the door, with their weapons beside them, so that they must needs look upon themselves as captives. Then Walter might not refrain him, but spake, "Sweet and dear friend, I have come a long way from the quay at Langton, and the vision of the dwarf, the maid, and the lady. And for this kiss wherewith I have kissed thee e'en now, and the kindness of thine eyes, it was worth the time and the travail. But to-morrow, meseemeth, I shall go no further in this world, though my journey be far longer than from Langton hither. And now, may God and All Hallows keep thee amongst this wild folk, whenas I shall be gone from thee." She laughed, low and sweetly, and said, "Dear friend, dost thou speak to me thus mournfully to move me to love thee better? Then is thy labour lost, for no better may I love thee than now I do, and that is with mine whole heart. But keep a good courage, I bid thee, for we be not sundered yet, nor shall we be. Nor do I deem that we shall die here, or to-morrow, but many years hence, after we have known all the sweetness of life. Meanwhile, I bid thee good night, fair friend." Chapter 27. Morning amongst the Bears. So Walter laid him down, and fell asleep, and knew no more till he awoke in bright daylight, with the maid standing over him. She was fresh from the water, for she had been to the river to bathe her, and the sun through the open door fell streaming on her feet, close to Walter's pillow. He turned about, and cast his arm about them, and caressed them, while she stood smiling upon him. Then he arose and looked on her, and said, "How thou art fair and bright this morning! And yet, were it not well that thou do off thee all this faded and drooping bravery of leaves and blossoms, that maketh thee look like to a jongleur's damsel on a morrow of May Day?" And he gazed ruefully on her. She laughed on him merrily, and said, "Yea, and belike these others think no better of my attire, or not much better, for yonder they are gathering small wood for the burnt offering, which, forsooth, shall be thou and I, unless I better it all by means of the wisdom I learned of the old woman, and perfected betwixt the stripes of my mistress, whom a little while ago thou lovedst somewhat." And as she spake, her eyes sparkled, her cheek flushed, and her limbs and her feet seemed as if they could scarce refrain from dancing for joy. Then Walter knit his brow, and for a moment a thought half-framed was in his mind. "Is it so, that she will bewray me, and live without me?" And he cast his eyes onto the ground. But she said, "Look up, and into mine eyes, friend, and see if there be in them any falseness toward thee.
for I know thy thought, I know thy thought. Dost thou not see that my joy and gladness is for the love of thee, and the thought of the rest from trouble that is at hand? He looked up, and his eyes met the eyes of her love, and he would have cast his arms about her, but she drew back and said, Nay, thou must refrain thee a while, dear friend, lest these folk cast eyes on us, and deem us over-lover-like, for what I am to bid them deem me. Abide a while, and then shall all be in me according to thy will. But now I must tell thee that it is not very far from noon, and that the bears are streaming into the dale, and already there is a host of men at the doom-ring, and, as I said, the bale for the burnt offering is well nigh dight, whether it be for us or for some other creature. And now I have to bid thee this, and it will be a thing easy for thee to do, to wit, that thou look as if thou wert of the race of the gods, and not to blench, or show sign of blenching, whatever betide. To yea-say both my yea-say and my nay-say, and lastly this, which is the only hard thing for thee. But thou hast already done it before somewhat, to look upon me with no masterful eyes of love, nor as if thou wert at once praying me and commanding me. Rather, thou shalt so demean thee, as if thou wert my man all simply, and no wise my master. O friend beloved, said Walter, here at least art thou the master, and I will do all thy bidding, in certain hope of this, that either we shall live together, or die together. But as they spoke, in came the elder, and with him a young maiden, bearing with them their breakfast of curds, and cream, and strawberries, and he bade them eat. So they ate, and were not unmerry, and the while of their eating the elder talked with them soberly, but not hardly, or with any seeming enmity, and ever his talk gat on to the drought, which was now burning up the down pastures, and how the grass in the watered dales, which was no widespread of land, would not hold out much longer unless the god sent them rain. And Walter noted that those two, the elder and the maid, eyed each other curiously amidst of this talk, the elder intent on what she might say, and if she gave heed to his words, while on her side the maid answered his speech graciously and pleasantly, but said little that was of any import. Nor would she have him fix her eyes, which wandered lightly from this thing to that, nor would her lips grow stern and stable, but ever smiled in answer to the light of her eyes, as she sat there, with her face as the very face of the gladness of the summer day. End of section 9.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.